Hello and welcome to part two of the off-season. This time we're still talking about international rugby, so many things to cover. So let's just pick up where we left off, shall we?
Yes.
Oh yes, and of course I've got Melody Robinson and Liam Napier here. Mel, one of the voices and faces of Sky Sports for years, and a former Black Fern. And Liam Napier, Ponsonby Under 85 Auckland Rugby Champion.
Doesn't quite compare to a two-time world champion, but, you know, you take what you can get in life.
That's right.
Under-85s is competitive in Auckland.
You're happy to name check it, though. And obviously, Liam writing for the New Zealand Herald. Women's rugby, Liam, it's just an amazing watershed year for them. Especially, I think, you know, creating those absolute superstars as well. Portia Woodman, obviously, springs to mind. And what she did in that World Cup, just, you know, it was just a magic highlight reel.
Yeah, and they've changed perceptions, haven't they? Mel mentioned the final and just the quality of that, but I think it's different this time because they've come back and they've had global recognition, New Zealand recognition, and they've also, it hasn't just subsided, they haven't just put it on the back burner and said, yeah, we'll talk about that next year. They've taken the cup around schools, they've been into communities, you know, spreading the gospel, and there's a real movement to want to push and fund the Women's 15s game, and it's an interesting concept because when you compare it to the men's, it's almost a reverse where the sevens has led the way. You know, they were the fully funded athletes. They were first on, you know, well, not the first, but they've been on television and in the papers and they've created these superstars. And now those sevens players have gone back to the 15s game and really, you know, pushed it again. So these are superstar athletes. They're world champions, and it's great to see them finally, you know, getting the recognition they deserve.
And you're right, Portia Woodman is an international star. She is massive. People recognise her everywhere. My son wrote her name on his arm when he was at the World Cup, and he had Portia on his arm, which was so cute.
Aww.
Yes, but, you know, there's other players, Fiatu Fatmaseli, even though Jeff Wilson stuffed her name up when he threw to her in the studio this year. She now is a household name.
That's right.
Amazing. And she's a hooker. And then you had Itenu, who was the prop. She scored a hat trick in one of the pool games.
Yes, from Tokoroa, represent.
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. Who would have thought that props would be famous as well? And Kelly Brazier was another one who was classed through the World Cup that made the finalists on the World Rugby Judging Panel. Unbelievable sets up tries. She's got a kick off both feet. Uses her instinctive ability to analyse, like at the drop of the hat. I mean, she's unreal.
That was the double pivot move as well. Was that controversial? Did the team buy into that straight away?
What do you mean?
Oh, sorry, Kelly Brazier. I'm getting my players mixed up there. We might have to. Who are you talking about? Sorry,
I was talking about Kelly Brazier.
Oh yeah, no, I thought they chose two first fives at one point.
Oh yeah, no, yes, they did. They did have two first fives. Yeah, Victoria Sabretsky and Afatali. But if you actually watched her play, she actually played more like a flanker because she ran it all into contact the whole time because she's really big and powerful. So, no, it wasn't controversial that they put those two players together at all.
Yeah, because it was the style of play. I think when you looked at every single backline move, almost invariably clicked, you know, and it's hard to see that at any level of rugby, accuracy.
Best thing about that was beating England.
A team of, well, during the tournament anyway, fully paid professionals.
Yeah, since February. But then I've talked to the Players Association since then, and they looked at New Zealand Players Association. They looked at those contracts, and some of the girls were only on £6,000 for 6 months. So that is not really a professional contract. No, so that's not what they want to do with New Zealand Rugby Union.
How are they going to make it professional, though? Where's the money going to come from?
You've got to get investors. I know there are a couple of companies that are interested now. I won't say who they are, but you'll find out. Yeah, investors. Maybe Sky Television might have to think about that new competition as well. Don't know. Just putting it out there. Richard Last.
Well, you can go and see him in the office after this.
I know, he's in the office next to me.
I actually reckon that when you see the New Zealand Rugby Union board members travelling around the world and hanging out with Prince Harry at Twickenham and stuff, that it does feel a little bit wrong that you can't fund rugby, you know, women's rugby.
Neil Sorensen said to me he went to the VIP dinner on the eve of the Women's Rugby World Cup final, and he showed me a photo, and there were about 40 old Caucasian men and two women. And he goes, what's wrong with this picture?
Yep, exactly. And I'm not trying to call them out. I mean, some, I've got mates who are on that board and they probably hopefully won't listen to this podcast. But they that just doesn't sit well. You can't really say that you're doing everything you can because you don't need to be there, to be honest.
Well, they sent Brent Impey over for the to Ireland, but that was great because the girls totally charmed him and he realised that 15-a-side rugby is worth investing in. So great move. And you know what? We haven't even talked about the other cool story with women's rugby, and that was Canterbury women winning their first ever Farah Palmer Cup, playing really beautiful, expansive rugby with this very young team that had been together for a couple of years. But, you know, former captain like Melissa Rusko was the co-coach there and did a great job. So I was really proud to see that my old province took it out.
When you talk about commercialising the game, it's hard to think of a better brand to be associated with as well when you've got two world champion teams, a rich story about, you know, girls like Salika Winiata, who's adopted her nephews and took them to the World Cup, no off-field scandals that we're aware of, and compare it, you know, when you compare it to the men, and, you know, that eight-week competition that Mel's talking about is going to be potentially in summer, it's going to have its own window to breathe, so, you know, all these things are building momentum and, you know, finally starting to happen for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think on Craigo's Wild, I sort of called out, who was it, Sanitarium on air, saying, well, come on, you know, you're a massive company. That sort of operates as a charity, is it? Or some kind of, you know, so there's a lot of money there and you don't have to worry about shareholders. So with all of that extra money, just adopt the, you know, the Black Ferns.
Well, I hope that they don't get a tampon sponsor.
Well... Do Sanitarium know some of their products? No, I don't. But, I mean, I think, you know, you could go with any of their products.
Is it Weet-Bix or who does the pull-out cards?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yeah, Weet-Bix Triathlon, New Zealand Sport wants to put money into community sport. This is community sport.
Let's go. Sanitarium. Let's also...
Hoxton Fizz will give them a buzz, eh?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, while you're down in the Nua, why don't you just put in a word for them? We're going to just quickly move on to sevens because this is going to be an international portion of this podcast. And so let's talk about sevens, Mel, starting with the women, because Sarah Goss went from sevens to 15s. But how was that team, that sevens team, operating now?
It was great to watch the side this year because usually Sarah Goss was a person that would stand out, but instead it was other players that stood up. Ruby Tui, for me, she's the player that I selected as my number one for World Sevens Player of the Year because she's a prop, does all the nuggety work, yet still gets great tries, really aggressive, and she was the one that stayed with the Sevens team the entire season. So when their girls like Portia Woodman, Sarah Goss, Kelly Brazier left for the 15-a-side campaign, she was one of the leaders. Same with Tyler Nathan Wong, took over the captaincy. And just some of the new young girls coming through, like Alan Bunting's doing a great job. He's got this tikanga Māori culture thing with the side that's resonating really well with them. And they're all growing into great leaders, really. So... And they beat Australia, you know, they took them out the entire season. I think they only dropped one game the entire season. I mean, that is an amazing comeback from the previous year before the Olympics where they weren't doing so well.
Yes, and I mean, it was a huge bounce back, wasn't it? Now, for the men's team, they've almost had the classic clean out of everybody. And then the coach, I felt sorry for Scott Waldrum, who's the classic in-betweener coach. And he had to choose players who were fairly raw and are starting to look good now, which is nice for the new coach, the Scottish bloke, Laidlaw. Sorry, the Scottish bloke. Professional. And, what do you make of that men's team?
Yes, interesting, isn't it? They we were so accustomed to the men's team being dominant for so long, Comm Games, you know, World Series, they just won everything. They were, you know, it was them and Fiji and nobody else. And it came back to the pack in a massive way. And it was a real reality check. The Olympics and the fight, I think New Zealand rugby butchered that in terms of not releasing the right players. And you know, they said one thing publicly and didn't do another behind closed doors. Titch moved on. And then you had Scott Waldrum coming and he's on a wee bit of a hiding to nothing in a way because, you know, you're on an interim basis waiting for Clark Laidlaw to come back from London Irish. And so that was a really difficult year. They struggled in a big way. And then Clark Laidlaw's come in and they're starting to set up in the mounts and they're there pretty much full time. So that's made a big difference. And this year they've gone well. They made the final. They knocked off the Bisbocker and in the semi final in Cape Town and won that tournament, their first for 21 months. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they go from here. But obviously Laidlaw's made some pretty big shifts straight away, and it's pretty interesting. You know, he's the first sort of foreign coach. He grew up going to Murrayfield and watching his old man halfback, and his cousin is Greg Laidlaw, the Scottish halfback. So yeah, interesting that New Zealand rugby's opened their doors to a foreigner. It's pretty rare, isn't it?
It is. He hasn't done a bad job at all. I mean, I know that also, just on a side note, seven coaches like Sue Gordon Titchens hate sugar and carbs, and they'd grab your bottle of Foxton Fizz and smash it on the pavement in front of you.
Pretty sure Titch went around taking cheese out of sandwiches as well.
Did he do that?
No ice cream.
I'd hate a coach like that. I used to like Daryl Suasua, but we went to Hong Kong Sevens, the New Zealand team, 1 year. And at the end of the tournament, we still have a day to watch the men's. And he said to me, if you drink one drop of alcohol, you'll not get selected for the Black Ferns. And so all of my teammates got really drunk around me, and I wasn't allowed to drink any. And he had his binoculars trained on me the entire time. It
really
sucked.
That does suck.
Are you going to tell us the backstory as to why you weren't allowed to drink?
I might be a little bit mischievous at times.
Do we have enough time on this podcast for a Melody Robinson backstory?
Apparently Glenn Osborne had told him that I was on top of a bar somewhere and that I had dropped my trousers and everyone saw my butt, and that was the reason he said I wasn't allowed to drink anything. Yeah. That's all.
So everyone saw your
nothing.
Butt? And yes. This is before social media, so that photo is not circulated. Or is it?
Nothing, no. It's normal behaviour.
I think that feels like a good end to this podcast, this series.
Just don't forget about Comm Games and Sevens World Cup.
Yes, okay, yes. We're moving forward to Sevens World Cup, which is in San Francisco, is it?
San Fran, I'm going to that. Very exciting.
Yes.
Looking for World Rugby.
When is that?
So that is July.
Okay.
And
after the Comm Games,
yeah, Comm Games, April. I had to pull that out of that because that's on TVNZ, but that's fine. So I think Australia are the New Zealand girls' biggest competition again. They've got their squad back up, looking good. All these young girls have finally started to get confidence in that side. And Tim Walsh is a really good coach, so it's going to be a real big battle.
Nice. And on the men's side, I mean, we need to keep, I guess, Karoy is in there. Ralvovo looks amazing. And Joe Weber. These are sort of crucial components. We can't have any disruption because it's just, I mean, it is World Cup year.
Yeah, massive year. Scott Curry's back as well, and he's, you know, the glue to that team, a guy that's sort of built like a back and
very handsome.
Plays he's like a handsome.
Oh, he's very handsome.
Yeah. Why don't they use him in advertising?
I know. They should. He's way better than DJ Forbes.
Yeah. He's ripped too. Anyway, sorry, Liam.
Yeah, no, I'm just getting over the image of Mel's butt, but you know, now just thinking about Scott. Yeah.
Scott's six pack.
Getting carried away.
Yeah.
It's quite hot in here now.
It is actually. It's a bit steamy. It's important to have all those guys who you consider are your frontliners, because without them I don't think they'd medal now. It's so competitive.
Yeah, and you know, they've started the year really well, and important to capitalise on that. And you've the Comm Games, you know, we've had great success there, but with Fiji's success in the Olympics and South Africa setting the bar, and it's incredibly competitive. You know, there's probably 8 to 10 teams that could genuinely knock each other over on any given day. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they come together, and it's nice to see them bring through a playmaker like Karoy, and even watching him go around, and I'm pretty sure he played for Otago in the Moreton Cup, you could see that he had something about him there, so... nice to see, you know, that playmaking role is so important, and we've sort of struggled to fill it, so he's doing the business at the moment.
Did you guys get any Merry Christmases from any rugby players or rugby personalities?
No. Nobody, no.
I got a T-shirt from Eden Park.
That's right, I saw that on your desk. What about you?
I got an email from Brent Gosper. I thought that was quite cool.
Brent Gosper is the...
Brett Gosper. CEO of World Rugby. I was
pretty
chuffed
with
that.
Done.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got... picture.
He has. He received it.
Yeah. He's got a great hairdo, eh?
It would have been from a Polaroid. It's like a hard copy of Mel's bum atop a bar somewhere in Hong Kong. Look, I think that might probably is a good full stop to this session of international rugby for the off-season. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, Liam. We'll see you again soon.